So what I would like to describe today is an attempt to get some useful physics out of a phenomenon that typically happens when you have brain worlds, and this is the exchange of energy between the brain, typically where we're supposed to live, and the bulk, where lots of other stuff can happen. And basically, the idea is that you may have phenomena that you don't want, and then you better know about them in advance, and phenomena that you might want, and one of these would be acceleration, cosmological acceleration, and it would be interesting to know when you can have them. So the rough plan is as follows. Brief introduction, then eventually I will write down the cosmological equations that I'm going to study, and then use them to study cases of inflow or outflow of energy from the brain, and I will present some exact solutions, some interesting fixed points with acceleration, and describe also a little bit the stability of the whole thing. And eventually I would abstract from this discussion some potential new mechanisms for inflation or late time acceleration. The brain world idea is an abstraction of either heterotic M theory or type 1 oriented folds. And an alternative realization is what people call Randall syndrome brain worlds. One of the basic features is that, which will be relevant in what I'm discussing, is that gravity is not always behaving as a four-dimensional interaction. And you know very well that when you have either compactification or a Randall syndrome way of realizing four-dimensional gravity, you have regions here. Is distance at long distances, and long typically is either longer than the compactification scale or the inverse of the Randall syndrome energy scale. Gravity on your brain world is behaving as a four-dimensional interaction. However, if you look what happens at short distances, then you find that gravity is higher dimensional. In this particular case, it's five-dimensional. There is an associated behavior, in fact, in cosmology of such realization of gravity, and as I will discuss a little bit more in detail later on, typically what you find is that you have a cosmology that at late times, or low densities if you wish, if you're expanding, behaves as standard four-dimensional cosmology, and this basically means that the Hubble constant goes as the square root of the driving density. And at early times you have different, you can call it five-dimensional cosmology, which means that the Humboldt constant goes linearly with driving density. There is a related important effect, and this is the emission of Kaluza-Klein graviton states. This is always there, of course you can imagine generalizations of this. And typically what this entails is energy loss from the brain. You can think also of some inverse effect, like the accretion of bulk energy, and this can happen, for example, if your bulk is not empty. Now, typically what you see is that there is a correlation between when this energy loss is important and also what type of period you're in. For example, you can see that if the evolution period is of the four-dimensional type, then emission is suppressed, and we'll see that in more detail later on. And if the evolution period is of the higher dimensional type, then emission can be important. So the rough picture is that in all of these cases, you have, first of all, new cosmological eras, which track essentially the realization of gravity. And you have a new effect that you have to worry about, and this is big bulk energy exchange. There can be other factors that affect both the realization of four-dimensional gravity and, of course, the associated energy exchange. And another example that I can mention here is the so-called brain-induced gravity, which, for example, can dominate typically the ultraviolet and can turn gravity into four-dimensional short distances, and also it can be used to suppress Kaluza Klein emission at short distances. And such effects, for example, can be crucial for phenomenological applications. So typically all higher dimensional theories basically have some non-trivial four-dimensional gravity realization. You start from higher dimensional gravity, you have some type of mechanism which at least the distances we're looking today turns gravity into four-dimensional. So this is generic. And this implies non-trivial periods where you can have energy exchange between your brain world and whatever else is there, the bulk. So this has leads to two types of considerations. First of all, whenever you have non-trivial energy exchange, you can get important constraints of your physics. We know such constraints, for example, from people who consider large radius compactifications, and typically these are constraints, for example, that can come from supernova. You don't want to lose too much energy to the bulk, because that would be in it would not agree with the experimental data we have. So this is one thing you have to worry about. And eventually, you might have new and sometimes usual effects, for example, like inflation and late time acceleration. So let me be concrete, and I will describe one such contest that would be random syndrome cosmology. I think what I will say are also can happen in large radius compactifications, but this is simpler to discuss. That's why I chose it. And the starting point is, of course, for this context, although I will be more general later on, is you have a five-dimensional space, you have five-dimensional gravity, you have a five-dimensional cosmological constant, and you have a brain with some four-dimensional cosmological constant or tension somewhere. And M is the five-dimensional Planck scale, and then you define the random syndrome scale as the four-dimensional cosmological constant over the Planck mass to the cube in five dimensions. This is the effective four-dimensional Planck mass, M cubed over the random syndrome scale, and this is the effective four-dimensional cosmological constant, the combination of the five-dimensional one and the four-dimensional one, and this is, in fact, what's the random syndrome fine-tuning sets to zero, but I don't have to do it a priori. And the picture that emerges on the brain is, as I also advocated before, here is energy now, this is the random syndrome scale. At low energy or large distances, you have four-dimensional gravity, and at high energy or short distances, you have five-dimensional gravity, and this is automatically visible if you calculate the static gravitational potential between two sources on the brain. For large distances compared to 1 over k, what you find is that you have a leading behavior, which is 1 over r, this is four-dimensional gravity, and then a subleading correction which goes as 1 over r cubed. If you look at short distances at the same potential, what you find is the leading behavior, which is 1 over r squared, and then a subleading correction, which is 1 over r, etc. Let me go to the associated cosmology. So instead of solving for a static metric, you put homogeneous and isotropic ansatz on the brain, and then you get the cosmological equation that has been done some time ago by basically solving the equations in fact, and using the Israel matching conditions. And here is the result. The result is that the Hubble constant for the scale factor on the brain.
Excuse me, just to remind us, this is with an assumption that the energy density is all on the brain.
That's right. That is, you have basically an empty bulk only with a cosmological constant. You have some energy density on the brain, and then you resolve the equations. This is what I'm assuming now to set the stage. Eventually, I will relax that. So you have a term which goes proportional to the energy density of the brain square with the five-dimensional Planck scale, a term which is linear and is comes together with the effective four-dimensional Planck scale, you might have a term if your brain is curved, this is the curvature term, and you might have a leftover cosmological constant. And to see the context, define a dimensionless density, which is the energy density of the brain over the four-dimensional tension, and in that case, the evolution equation becomes like this. And if you redefine, in fact, time in k units to get rid of this, eventually you have the dimensionless Hubble constant square contains a quadratic term, a linear term, a curvature term, and a possible leftover cosmological constant. And here, automatically, you can see the two periods of evolution. If the dimensionless density is much smaller than 1, you can drop this term, and this is four-dimensional evolution. If the effective density is much bigger than 1, then the rho squared term dominates, and then you have completely different types of evolution, which I called five-dimensional by Fiat. Now, so this is how it works in the very simple cosmology of the Randall syndrome model, the two types of cosmological evolution, and now I would like to couple them in the same simple type of situation with the potential exchange between bulk and rain. The equations that I wrote down before, in fact, assume that there is no loss of energy from the brain. However, as has been discussed, in fact, some time ago, you may have processes like, for example, this one, where you have the scattering of two initial particles, A and B, into a third one, and then the emission of a Kaluza-Klein graviton state in the bulk, which, in fact, induce loss of energy from the brain. And in this case, you can estimate this loss of energy being, in fact, something that's proportional, of course, to the appropriate cross-section rate, in fact, for this process. Then you have to multiply it with two densities, initial densities. And since you're talking about energy, you have to multiply it with the energy lost due to the Kaluza-Klein state. And if you are in a thermal average, as typically happens in cosmology, then you have to make also there a thermal average. And this is something you can calculate. So the cross-section, in fact, basically what you have to do is you have to sum over Kaluza-Klein states. Here you have a continuous spectrum. And then to leading order, this vertex basically is proportional to the overlap of their wave function on the brain. So this is what they called psi square here. And in fact, if you solve the equations for the Kaluza-Klein states, you find that this vertex for masses which are much smaller than the Randall syndrome scale is suppressed like this, and for high masses compared to the Randall syndrome scale is 1. So if you use this, you can calculate, yes?
Presumably there's also quantum creation of Kaluza-Klein pairs. Is that always much smaller than normal?
I don't know, but I'm computing the obvious. In fact, that's something that eventually you have to also worry about. But I'm computing, yeah, the most obvious source of energy loss, which is always there because of the couplings of gravity. There might be, in fact, sometimes one could imagine that it could be also more important. Eventually, you will have to worry about this.
Okay, so yeah. That hasn't been calculated.
No. So if you put everything together, what you find out is that this cross-section is always weighted by 1 over m Planck. M Planck is the four-dimensional Planck scale. And then for temperatures much smaller than the Randall syndrome scale, it's suppressed quadratically in this small ratio. And for temperatures much bigger than the Randall syndrome scale, it's in fact enhanced by this large ratio. So this is basically what I said with words in the introduction. And you can put, in fact, now this cross-section inside the rate of energy loss. I will assume that the particles basically that scatter belong to the driving density of the universe, in order, in fact, to have something interesting. And I will assume the usual relation between density and pressure with a W coefficient. And in this case, first of all, you know that the scattering densities A and B scale like the temperature to the 3 times 1 plus W minus 1, because these are particle densities instead of energy densities. The energy of the Kaluza-Klein states are typically of order T, and the temperature, in fact, typically scales as 1 over the scale factor. This is standard. and also that the dimensionless energy density in fact scale is like e to the 3 times 1 plus w, and you can plug this into the formula and you can re-express the energy lost, d rho dt lost, either as a function of the temperature, it's here, or you can use this relation in fact to write it as a function of the density. You can do whichever you like.
This equation of state parameter would be constant?
In this, of course, yes, this is assumed to be constant, and typically, as it happens in cosmology, these things are valid for a period of evolution where a given energy density is dominating. If it's not, then you have to work harder. So if you put it in, what you find is that the four-dimensional period, that is rho to Engel much smaller than one, this scales like this power of rho to Engel, and this is the dimensionless energy density. And for the period where this is much bigger than 1, the five-dimensional period, this scales is rho to Engel square. And eventually what you would like to compare is the energy that you lose from your brain due to this emission compared to the dilution of the energy of the brain because of the expansion, to know what type of error you're doing. So this is the ratio. And in the four-dimensional period, that is the period that corresponds to four-dimensional evolution, in fact, this is something that's small because of this. And in the five-dimensional period is of order 1. So in this simple example, in fact, it says that if you are at the end of the universe where you have five-dimensional evolution, this energy loss has to be included in the equations, otherwise you're doing a mistake. It also indicates that in cases like this, in fact, you can eventually, for some types of processes, write this loss of energy as functions of the density, something that motivates the ansatz I would use in the general case later. So, now I would like to attack the general case. The general case means that I have arbitrary stuff on the brain, arbitrary stuff on the bulk, and in this case, one of the basic equations is the gravitational equation that looks like this. The Einstein tensor, five-dimensional Einstein tensor, is equal to the stress tensor, and the stress tensor now has two types of contributions, one coming from the brain and the other coming from the bulk. And I chose also to separate the vacuum energies from the brain and the bulk, and they're here, for example, V and lambda, as I called them before, and I have the matter again on the brain that I took again to be rho and p in the homogeneous ansatz, and so far I leave t bulk, in fact, arbitrary. I go through, I write down these equations, I go through the same algorithm as before by using the Israel conditions to derive the equations for the brain data, and I get back to the following equations. The first equation is the conservation equation for the matter on the brain, and in general, of course, this is not zero because a T05 component of the stress tensor, in fact, tells you that you are communicating energy between brain and bulk. So this, I have it there, and then I cannot integrate, of course, in this case, the equation to have standard first order equations, basically because also I have a T55 component that contributes to this equation. The rest of the things are standard. Lambda is the leftover cosmological constant, if you have any, and V and P and rho are the standard parameters. Also, yes?
Is there some boundary condition here that's relating scale factors in the bulk and the brain?
In fact, no. The only thing, in fact, I should add one more thing here. These are equations, in fact, that are pulled back from the brain. So they're equations where A is the scale factor on the brain, okay? Rho is obviously the energy density on the brain. And the only other thing I have to tell you is where do I evaluate this? And these are precisely T05 and T55 at the position of the brain. That's all I need. And of course, this set of equations is a subset of the full five-dimensional equations.
But isn't something also happening to the geometry of the bulk?
Yes, of course. The whole point is that I can get rid of this, and the only way these equations communicate with the geometry of the bulk is through these values, of course. Because T55 and T05 also determine the geometry of the bulk. Here I have their values at the brain.
Maybe you talk of the difference Yeah. Wasn't there also a term, you told me it was that term for... Now that term is... Is this related to this fee?
It is in there, yes, it will appear shortly. Right. In fact, if I drop this term, and I drop this term, and then try to integrate this equation to go to the standard Friedman equation, then one of the integration constants will be precisely this term. But I haven't gotten there yet. So this is a set of equations that relate brain data with some properties of the bulk, and of course, as such, I cannot go any further. Either I will have to pick a specific model and solve the equations to see what happens, or I will have to make some assumptions to continue. And that's what I'm going to do. I will first make an approximation for two reasons, basically because it simplifies matters and because I think it's well motivated. And this approximation technically says that the P55 component, if you compare it with the five-dimensional cosmological constant, is much smaller than the matter density of the brain if you compare it with the four-dimensional cosmological constant. Now, this is a simplification because if this is true, then I can drop P55 from the equations. Whether this is well motivated, at this point I can say two things. One is that one can advance arguments that this can, in fact, be valid for whole periods of the evolution. If you think of this as a system of partial differential equations, you can also argue that there is a whole class of solutions where this is valid, in fact, and it cannot be invalidated. And there are some other arguments, like the behavior, in fact, of particles that live on the brain and how they behave. For the moment, in fact, that's all one can say about this approximation. And I think, eventually, one would have to study it in concrete, exact solutions, in fact, in this case, to understand it better.
So, yes.
Yes.
So does it mean that you, so this is a five-dimensional pressure on the brain?
Right.
So does it mean that...
At the position of the brain.
If you consider the projection of gravitons, you are neglecting the fact that they are going to strike back.
That's right.
The brain.
Okay. That's right. So, if I use this approximation, then the system basically, I can simplify it. Basically, in the previous equation that I showed you, all this says is I can drop this term. And then I will do one more step. I will integrate once this equation to bring it in a normal form. But of course, this cannot be integrated. And typically, what you have to do in order to integrate is you have to use a fake new variable. Well, fake in the beginning. Fakes sometimes can become non-fakes, depending on how you look at them. So, what I do in order to write these equations as first-order equations is I introduce this dummy parameter chi, and here, in order not to carry indices, this T basically is the T05. This is the rate of energy loss on the brain, and in fact, in my conventions, T positive means I'm losing energy to the bulk. So, I use this new variable, which satisfies this conservation equation, okay, and then this equation together with this equation is equivalent to the second order equation I called before. So this chi appears as a new mirage density that appears in the evolution in this Friedman equation, and it satisfies its own type of evolution. What it is, we will see it in some simple cases. Further, as it is, I cannot go much more than that because I don't know what this T is. I have to do better than this. So here I will do phenomenology. That is, I already motivated an ansatz that the energy loss in many cases can be written as a function of the driving density, rho. What kind of function depends, of course, on the particular process that you're considering. And typically, in fact, if you are in a conformal invariant theory, this process will go as a power of rho. And if you are in a scaling region, then you will have logarithmic corrections. So for the moment, I don't want to specify what generates this. All I want to understand is, if I assume something like this, where do I end up? If I get something interesting, then I have to come back and find something that will generate this.
Yes? We're talking about gravitons, you don't really have to form variance.
No, but in particular case, in fact, like the pure random syndrome, as I showed you, it does happen like this because it's the conformal invariance, if you wish, in the dual theory that is relevant for this. So for example, you've seen that the two cross-sections that I derived in the pure Randall syndrome case were power-like. In fact, you can trace them precisely to this. If you modify the bulk theory, you add more stuff, then generically, if eventually the solution would correspond to an asymptotic ABS solution, but not ABS all the way, then you're considering a scaling region, in which case, then such cross-sections would look like powers corrected by logarithms. And you can imagine also to be far away from a scaling region, in which case could be anything. This is an ansatz. And then once this is a known function of rho, then I can sit down, this is a closed set of equations, I can sit down and try to solve them and see what I can get out. So I will do an analysis, in fact, first of all, in the small density regime, in which case, in fact, you drop this rho squared term and you drop also this term from the equations, and then eventually I will describe the full nonlinear set. So in the four-dimensional regime, the equations are like this: conservation of energy in the brain, this is the energy loss, and this is the Friedman equation, this is the evolution of this density chi. A few simple things to see. First of all, if it happens that the energy density on the brain is radiation, then I can combine these two equations by defining a rho hat, which is a combination of rho and chi. And if you do it like this, then rho hat is conserved as a radiation density, and it also is the density that drives the expansion of your brain. And in fact, in this case, chi, you can see, is your standard mirage dark radiation, or dark radiation as it is known. In particular, if P here is zero, then you are in the standard Randall syndrome case that has been discussed before. Rho and chi do not interact, of course, and this is the usual radiation. On the other hand, you can have something more general. P can be different than zero, and then what this equation tells you is that the energy you're losing into the bulk is going into chi, so that the sum of rho plus chi remains constant. And you can see it here. I chose a simple energy loss equation. This is typically what would happen if you have the driving energy density to decay. In that case, T is proportional to rho. And in this case, we see that rho, of course, dilutes in the usual 1 over a to the fourth for radiation, but also because it decays. And chi, in fact, also dilutes as 1 over a to the fourth, but is enhanced because of that decay. In fact, this type of behavior is more general. It doesn't happen only for W equal 1/3, but this is a simple case that it's easy to see how it works. So we should think, in fact, of this dummy energy density chi as something that generalizes what is known as dark or mirage radiation from the bulk. And it's, in fact, this energy loss of the brain is eventually is translated into a contribution to this chi. Let me discuss another interesting point, and this is accelerating solutions, in particular, in fact, exponential accelerating solutions. So this would correspond to having fixed points in this set of equations, where eventually the Hubble constant, the energy density on the brain, this dark energy density, and eventually the energy loss from the brain, eventually reach constant values. And plugging this back into the set of equations, we get from these three equations, these three relations. And in general, of course, these are polynomial equations that, in principle, you can solve. You can see some general properties. First of all, in order to solve this, you need, in fact, to have T smaller than zero, so you have to have inflow of energy on the brain, and also W, in fact, should be between minus 1 and 1/3. Of course, the case W equals minus 1 corresponds to having a leftover energy density of the brain, so this is the trivial solution in some sense. This is not, of course, surprising, because at least intuitively you would expect that if you bring in energy density on the brain, you may arrange, in fact, so that you have a situation where effectively your brain is inflating because this is how you keep the energy density constant. This is in fact a concrete way of realizing a steady state universe by having the energy coming in from the bulk rather than out from nowhere. You can, in fact, such fixed points, you can study their stability in this regime. And this is rather trivial. You just write down the fluctuations. And here I defined this parameter nu, it's the logarithmic derivative of the energy loss at the fixed point. And if you're using this power-like behavior, nu here and nu there is the same thing. And then you get this fluctuation equation, where this matrix has eigenvalues that you can determine. And eventually, what you find is that these eigenvalues indicate that these fixed points are all stable if W is in this standard range, and mu, in fact, is between 0 and 3 halves. So these types, in fact, of fixed points, what they will give you, in some sense, is inflation independent of initial conditions, because they are attractors. Of course, not all situations, finding solutions for all situations is not easy. In fact, sometimes you have to do also numerical situations. When your brain, for example, is not flat, it's curved, then getting even approximate solutions is difficult. But here I give you some examples of solutions in that case to show you also how the energy exchange, in fact, can affect the different solutions. So this corresponds to a brain that has positive curvature, k equal 1. W, in fact, is bigger than minus 1/3. And in fact, the energy loss is determined by this exponent nu equal to 1, means basically that your main brain density is decaying, so that the energy loss is proportional to rho. What you get here is eternal deceleration. And the difference between having energy exchange or not is this bump here. Otherwise, you would have something like this. In the opposite situation, in which instead of a positive curvature brain, you have a negative curvature brain, and you take non-relativistic matter, you can find, in fact, that you have first deceleration and then acceleration. If you didn't have the outflow, in fact, you will have no acceleration in the end. But here you get acceleration in the end. Let me, in fact, describe the full nonlinear system. And there are various ways of writing it. One, in fact, useful way of writing it is to write two equations which determine rho, the energy density of the brain, and chi, the mirage energy density, as functions of the scale factor. And in fact, the equations look like this. And the T of rho is, of course, as I said, a function of rho that you can take it to be power-like if you like. And these two coefficients, beta and gamma, are related to the five-dimensional Planck constant and the four-dimensional Planck constant. And this piece here is, of course, potential curvature on the brain. There is another way you can write this, by writing this as an equation for chi as a function of rho. And finally, one of the important parameters is the acceleration that you can also write as this function of rho and chi, and you may have an extra bare cosmological constant. This parameter epsilon here basically takes values 1 or minus 1, depending whether you consider an expanding universe or a contracting universe. So these are the equations to be solved in the general case. And of course, you realize that if k is different from 0, this is not a homogeneous system. It's very difficult to do. If you don't have this term, then this is much simpler. But still complicated. Let me indicate some general properties. If I want to have positive acceleration, q bigger than 0, then necessarily, from the formula I showed you before, chi has to be negative. And because this is, in fact, the only term that is positive, in principle, minus chi, let me show you the formula again. So if I don't have a bare cosmological constant, because this is a trivial case, and you look at this, this is negative, this is negative, this is negative, and because this rho is always positive, of course, chi has to be negative, otherwise there's no chance of getting something positive. Chi, of course, is something mirage, so it's okay. Now, once you realize this, you also know that chi appears in the Friedmann equation, and then it contributes a negative term in the Friedmann equation, because h squared is something proportional to rho plus chi. So what you can have is that for chi, you must compensate for rho. So typically, in these cases, at least in the flat case, you must have more matter in order to have acceleration. In particular, in this simple case, for a flat universe, omega chi, for example, has to be smaller than minus 1, and omega matter has to be bigger than 2. On the other hand, if you use a curved brain, k minus 1, for example, then you can have other numbers. For example, you can have omega matter, which is a tenth, and then omega chi being just a small negative number, and then most of the omega is in the curvature.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
start from a negative and becomes positive.
In principle, yes, but when it becomes positive, it's one of the regions I cannot trust.
Why?
Because I made some assumptions.
So, anything in the
verse
have a naked singularity?
Sorry?
You have a naked singularity in the verse.
That I don't know, but it could be. Yeah, that could be. Maybe, in fact, that could be one way possibly of showing that this probably cannot happen. I don't know, to be honest. Another general property is that when you have outflow, you're losing energy from your brain, rho is always decreasing if you have expanding solutions. In the case where you have energy exchange, this type of statement, which looks obvious, is not always so obvious. Also, because of some square root that we have seen in the equations, the acceleration as a function of the energy density is always below this parabola, so that the square root is basically positive. And that we will see eventually when we plot the solutions. When you have a flat or a positive curved brain and W bigger than minus one-third, you always have deceleration at large enough densities. And also, if k equals 0 or 1, that is positive densities, but W is bigger than the one corresponding to radiation, then you have deceleration at all times. And finally, if your brain is flat, then the system becomes autonomous, and for such types of energy loss, in fact, you can solve it in the four-dimensional regime by presenting, in fact, the Hubble constant implicitly as a function of rho. One more thing is what happens to the linearized fixed points we found where the brain is inflating exponentially. Well, you can do the analysis also in the non-linear case. You're finding, in fact, the small fluctuations around such inflating solutions. It's a bit more complicated, but let me give you, because these formulas are impenetrable as such, one of the results that I will describe it a little bit more in detail, although they're generic, is that when you have non-relativistic matter in the brain, and then T goes linearly with rho, and it's the coefficient, in fact, is smaller than a number, then you get two real values for the exponents, and the plus one, in fact, corresponds to a sample point always, and the minus one is a stumble fixed point. And we will see it in the picture in a moment. So, this is one of the cases that I would like to show, which is non-relativistic matter in the brain. The brain is flat, and this non-relativistic matter, in fact, is unstable. So nu equal to 1, and I'm losing energy. Okay? Then I have two types of families of solutions. This is the profile, in fact, of the solutions. You notice that this is what I'm plotting here is acceleration versus rho, the real energy density. As I said, all solutions must be below this parabola because of the square root. And here, I plotted also the same case without energy exchange, energy outflow, which is, in fact, this. When you have just non-relativistic matter, the acceleration is minus one-half rho. So you see two types of behavior here. you have solutions which start, for example, like this one, at high density, and then they go towards, since I'm expanding, at low density, but they're always decelerating. I'm always below in the negative axis. And I have solutions which decelerate, they enter here, they accelerate, and then they decelerate again. In fact, such a thing, if you have the right types of parameters, in fact, could give you any time inflation, because it contains inside also the exit. Let me show you an opposite case, that of influx, otherwise similar. Flat brain, non-relativistic matter, which is unstable. Here you have a more complicated profile and three classes of behavior. First of all, again, you can see this is again acceleration versus real energy density. And this is the parabola. Everything is below that parabola. These are the two fixed points I told you before, this and this. This is the one that's absolutely stable. This is a saddle point. So you have, of course, different types of behaviors depending on how you start. For example, you have this line where you start at small density, and this density, in fact, can go all the way around and end here. And of course, you're having a brain, basically, that's the density is growing because you have too much energy coming in. But you have a whole other class of solutions which are, in fact, attracted to the stable fixed point. And at the fixed point, in fact, what happens to your brain is that it's exponentially inflating with an effective cosmological constant that's determined not by the parameters of your fundamental theory, by the particular cross-section, because this coefficient A is the coefficient, in fact, of the cross-section that's driving this energy density as it comes into the brain.
And that can be negative?
One more thing that I don't think I noted it, but I was going to say it later, is that all exponential fixed points that you're finding, in fact, correspond to positive cosmological constant. There is none with negative. Why? I don't know.
But I meant whether the cross-section can give this negative inflow. I'm a bit confused.
Basically, what you're assuming here when you call...
Can it give a negative, an inflow?
No. I mean, that's something you have to assume. You have to assume that you have a process, like, for example, if you put a cold sheet inside a hot gas, you have a process which, of course, transfers energy onto your sheet. And this, so... Without telling you what this cross-section is, of course, because I didn't write down a microscopic object, what I told you is that this rate is positive, okay, and it goes like, in this particular case, is linear and low, okay? And I took it, this I take it to be negative, so that it corresponds to inflow, that's all. Yeah. At this phenomenological level, that's all I have to do. I didn't tell you where this could come from. There is another, in fact, case which indicates another interesting effect. And this is the locking of the mirage or dark energy density chi to the observable one rho, to the one on the brain. And this happens if your cross-section goes as the 3/2 power of rho. And I parameterize, in fact, the coefficient in terms of this parameter mu, and I take the brain to be flat so that I can handle it. Then, in fact, you can solve the system exactly. So you have two implicit equations which relate the Hubble constant, the observable energy density rho, and the scale factor A. And, of course, you can solve them in some regimes explicitly to see what happens. And, for example, in a late-time regime where A is large and A is bigger than this value, for example, you find the behavior that H squared is proportional to rho, because I solved for chi, rho goes as a given power of A, and chi, in fact, is a fraction of rho. But otherwise, they behave the same. For example, something like this one could use to simulate dark matter on the brain. The role of the dark matter would be played by the mirage energy density from the bulk. And in fact, you can make it even closer to what you want if you choose such a cross-section which is rho to the 3/2 log rho, in which case you obtain that chi goes as 1 over 8 to the cube, and rho goes also as 1 over 8 to the cube, modulo logarithmic corrections. So let me summarize. I argued that the cosmological energy exchange between brain and the bulk is certainly generic and sometimes unavoidable, and it always is there when you have higher dimensionalizations of gravity. I've done a phenomenological analysis, and this analysis indicates, first of all, that you can have conversion of radiation to dark radiation, that you can have generic stable de Sitter points in the case where you have inflow of energy. In the case of outflow, you can either have eternal deceleration or areas or periods of intermediate acceleration. Also, in the case of inflow, the generic fixed points are always de Sitter. And you can also have situations where you can have passage from acceleration to deceleration. And in fact, with these few pieces of behavior, you can even speculate a situation in which you start with a brain that's hotter than the bulk, and then according to the type of solution I showed you before, you start with acceleration plus radiation, for example, and then you pass through an acceleration period that could simulate the inflation that you like, with, in fact, in that case, it turns out that the effective cosmological constant is related to the fundamental constants of your original theory, the five-dimensional and the four-dimensional Planck scale, and then eventually exit into deceleration and stop it. And then either you can have supercooling or eventually you reach the density of the bulk, in which case you can have an inflow, and this inflow, in fact, will eventually drive you in an attractor, which will give the acceleration today. And in this case, in fact, what is interesting is that the effective cosmological constant will be determined by the particular cross-section, that if you're lucky and you make it work out, it could be something, it could be a molecular cross-section, for example, at the EV range. There are, of course, many open problems between, in fact, claiming that all of this can be implemented in a serious model. And I've listed a few here. First of all, one would have to understand in more detail the approximation that I'm doing here, which is to assume that somehow the bulk is lighter, in quote marks, comparatively speaking, to the brain, that is, that the dimensionless energy density on the brain is much bigger than the associated dimensionless energy density of the bulk, but at the position of the brain. As I said, there are some general arguments from differential equations that this can be done, but whether this can happen in a regime where you're interested physically, this is a different story. This is something that needs to be understood. This is true, but then you will have to work much harder, because in that case, you have to put the details of a specific model in order to solve these equations. The advantage, if you wish, of that assumption was that you could determine some general properties without knowing all the possible details of the theory you're solving. This is a scaling, that's right. But the scaling you can drop, in fact, and still solve the problem. I think the most important assumption here is the fact that I'm dropping d5 phi. In fact, if you give me any function of rho, I can put it in the computer and solve it. But this one, you would have to understand it better. Certainly one should investigate further physically interesting solutions, and in particular, trying to get the microscopic cross-sections that can provide, in fact, some of these properties that I showed you. And as I said, I expect this to generalize to standard compactifications instead of the Randall syndrome, and the details of this have to be worked out. So I should stop here, in fact. Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
So on almost your last slide, you had a scale for the inflation in your model, is that right? You have a Hubble constant of n cubed over m5 squared.
Yeah.
So what size is that going to be?
Depends what you put in your model.
But I mean, suppose this is some brainwave model with a low scale.
There are various, in fact, reasonable values that you can take for these parameters, in fact, depending on how you realize your model. One that people like, because they're close, in fact, to next round of experiments, would be that, for example, this scale is Well, M Planck is M Planck, of course, but this scale can be in the TV range. And there are other types of situations where, in fact, the both scales, in fact, will be of the order of M Planck.
But if that is a TV, then that, the typical energy density during inflation is minute.
Sorry?
If M is a TV,
yes.
Your typical energy scale during inflation will be tiny.
Yes.
So then you don't get the correct four-dimensional gravity as a usual scale.
No, you will, in fact, get it beyond the millimeter scale.
Not if M, I mean, there is a constraint of M must be bigger than 10 to the 8 G.
You're saying for K to be smaller than a millimeter?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Yes, that's right.
Okay, so then I'll figure out the scale level corresponder. I really was wondering whether one can get a satisfactory wait time cosmology in terms of producing the right barrier and some of the things like that, because if your reheat scale is too...
Well, you have to work a couple of more things, of course, than this, apart from just knowing what the scale. And one thing that you have to figure out is whether you have, first of all, the right scale for the fluctuations. That you have to work out extra. And eventually, of course, you have to know whether this is before or after the class synthesis.
But here the Hubble radius would be less than the millimeter.
Sorry?
In this case, the Hubble radius should be less than 1 millimeter if you want to recover usual gravity. It seems that H dot, to take the inverse,
right. In that case, yes. That's right. That's why I think this can work better if both scales are of the order of the Grand Unified or Planck scale. Yeah.
So I would have thought that below some energy scale, there has to be a complete, effective, four-dimensional description of what's going on. And what's confusing me about what you're saying is you're saying that we might be able to get a new mechanism for explaining the acceleration that we now see out of this stuff.
It depends what you call a four-dimensional description. Obviously, in all of this, I'm assuming that during the periods where something can happen extra from your standard four-dimensional evolution is that you're exchanging energy with another part of the theory. Now, this part of the theory, of course, depends on the details, whether it, what type of scales it has. But this part of the theory, it might be that in some regime, maybe you can approximate this as a four-dimensional theory. I'm not sure. Depends on the details. But it's something extra that you have to add.
Right, in fact, this would have thought, as long as the energy density is sufficiently low, then it should be something that I can think of as some collection of particles. You might need, you know...
Right, but you cannot always honestly... Right, so that would be an extra set of...
The real point is that once you go below a certain scale, the four dimensions that we're describing shouldn't really be thought of as the brain, right? It should be thought of as some average over the brain and the bulk.
Right.
And at that point...
But the details of how you put these together depend on the particular energy exchange and what you're exchanging this. So if you fix something, maybe you can write down a model in terms of four-dimensional data. However, I would expect in general trouble because you've seen, for example, that for many types of behavior, chi is negative. You have to write something, obviously, four-dimensional that is peculiar with negative energy density.
So you claim you can get that kind of behavior even when the bulk theory has nothing funny.
Right, right. Right. In fact, we know that in general, when you take higher dimensional theories and you reduce them to four dimensions, you can get many such behaviors, like also you can get effective Ws that are outside the 1 minus 1 range. Although both theories in the higher dimensional range, although the higher dimensional theory is normal in the higher dimensional sense. So this is not the first time that it can happen.
So you're saying that the acceleration today can be thought of something coming from the bulk?
If you want to put it in a couple of words, yes.
Because we have very, very, very low energy.
Right. Right. No, but this effect, as I argued there, in fact, is not due to the five-dimensional region. It's an attractor, in fact, over both four-dimensional and five-dimensional region. And it's due to a cross-section, not the fact that your gravity is five-dimensional at high energy.
So maybe a related question which I had was,
Do you have a full five-dimensional description of what it would take to get, let's say...
No, that's the hard part. That's the hard part.
For example, if you said I have a black hole or something that's putting the energy that you could
charge. This is what, in some sense, is open and has to be worked out. For example, that's the only way you can try to argue that the approximations you've made, in fact, make sense in the regime you want. You have, from this to start, and write down a five-dimensional model, you have some control over the bulk geometry.
Can you get a steady state universe?
Oh, yeah, that's the most trivial thing you can get. All the fixed points are such, yes. Asymptotically.
Like steady state.
Yeah.
It's a natural solution.
Yes.
Any more comments? You want to make these comments in public?
Steady state was constant energy density and no pressure.
Yes.
So it wasn't the sitter.
No, it was constant energy and matter density.
Constant energy, matter density, and no pressure.
Right, but here you can do the same thing by starting with an energy density on your brain, which is, for example, not relativistic, but the steady state is because of the stuff that gets in through the bulk, if you have the right cross section, of course.
Can also be dust, can also be people zero time.
I don't have to specify that in this description, in fact.
All of this discussion of inflow presumably requires very fine tuning the initial conditions in the bulk. Have all this radiation coming in on the brain.
No, if the bulk is empty, of course, but if the bulk is full, why? All we need is, if you have a bulk with a certain energy density, okay, typically, of course, in this kind of business, most cosmological models assume the bulk is empty and only cosmological constant.
It's because what's happening to the bulk geometry?
No.
So what's happening to the bulk geometry?
I don't know from the equations I wrote. I have to look at the full equations, in fact, which tell you, and that's much more, no, I haven't done that. The whole point that I can do all of this is because I don't have to do that. It could be. Could be. That's why eventually you have to eventually look at a specific model where you have control also of what happens in the bulk.
One thing that you haven't put into these phenomenological equations is the possibility of just decay of bulk energy density into ordinary energy density.
No, I did. That's what I call inflow.
I mean decay in the sense of describe the bulk energy as some kind of Kaluza-Klein excitations moving around in the bulk, and one of those particles decays into photons.
Right, but this has to be in the brain. That's what I call inflow. Because inflow, by definition, is energy density of the bulk, whatever that is, transforming into energy density of brain particles.
But then after some finite lifetime, there's nothing left in the bulk. Right?
If that is efficient, yes, but for example, think of the situation where you have a sheet inside the hot gas.
Yeah, if the hot thing is enormous, yes.
Yes, that's why, in fact, it is relevant, as David said, but to know exactly, of course, in detail what happens in the bulk, because if something like this happens, then you have to recheck what you're doing.
Can W be smaller than minus 1 because of U?
No, W, you're talking about the effective W, because W for me is what I have on the brain.
Well, the effective W on the brain.
I don't know, but I can tell you what I think from experience with other similar situations where you have interaction with higher dimensions, and the answer should be yes.
The reason I'm asking is confusing, because I thought it would causal constraints on what
W. Yes, but if you have higher dimensions, obviously four-dimensional causality is violated, because you can go through in another dimension. We know examples of this. That's why, in fact, you don't have to have W between 1 and minus 1. In Mirage cosmology, for example, you don't.
But is there a regime in which there's a low energy four dimensional effective field theory that describes everything?
I don't know unless I have the details of the bulk, but I could imagine, in fact, that in a case where the spectrum, the Kaluza-Klein spectrum, for example, of stuff in the bulk is continuous, then I don't think you can have a well defined regime where you cannot have a gap, let's say, where you can drop some stuff. That is, it is true that you can argue in that case, and this is what was obvious in my most simple level student type of description. You can argue that stuff on the top may be irrelevant, but it's difficult to put the cutoff at the given.
This is Randall syndrome, whichever it is, the one with no second strain.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
area, no, it's certainly weird.
RS2 in the normal nomenclature.
RS2, which has one.
Yeah.
If there is a four-dimensional effective theory that gives you this W less than minus one, then that will constrain M to be remarkably long, much, much lower than.
M, what you call M?
Your.
Adi.
Because otherwise you will violate all kinds of things with W.
Right, yes, yes.
Yeah, so I just found that in some cases it should not be so hard to construct the bulk description. I mean, if you turn it around, let's say we start with the bulk as some kind of a homogeneous cosmology, try to rig up.
In fact, let's put it like this. There are one or two exact solutions known which have the full, let's say, time dependence. And we have also the description of the bulk. These, in fact, are too simple to describe such situations. So, yes, in principle, you can write down the equations, but you have to use clever ansatzen to get more non-trivial solutions. That's something, in fact, we're trying, but it's not as easy as this. But it's something, of course, that I agree with you, that it has to be done before you give full credibility to such effects. It's equations in two variables, and yes, yeah, that's right, yes. That's the typical difficult thing. So, well, of course, if you have the right ansatz, you can find classes of solutions, but no, you have to do it.
Any more questions or comments? Okay, if not, we thank you for coming again.